Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I don't know if you give books as gifts at Christmas time, but I would recommend, and I'm not the only one to do this, a book that appears on some of the bestseller lists or the most recommended lists for the end of the year. Nonfiction are Mary Roach's books, and this year it's a book called Fuzz. She, of course, wrote Gulp and Grunt and Spook and Bonk and Packing for Mars, which is a bit of an outlier now, isn't it? You couldn't think of a single syllable name for that book, Mary?
We failed. I failed. My agent failed. My editor failed.
It's amazing you even sold any of the dang things, except that it was brilliant and fun and funny and thoughtful.
And yet still I'm racked with regret. Why not one syllable? How hard could that have been?
Well, what would it be, though? I mean,
I don't know.
Mars? No, nah. That doesn't accomplish it. Besides, it's not about Mars. It's about packing for Mars, about how you would get and survive there. So
exactly.
How do you get in? So packing for Mars is pretty economical if you think about
packing
it.
Packing for Mars. Not really. Four syllable packing. It's pathetic.
So now, yeah, pack, producer Aliff just whispered into my ear, but for where? But we digress. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. Such a nice day to walk around Chicago. I love Chicago.
I do too. Fuzz is your latest. Okay, what is Fuzz about?
Well, the subtitle is When Nature Breaks the Law, which perhaps doesn't really answer your question. It's basically a book about human wildlife conflict, because when you think about it, animals, they commit manslaughter, jaywalking, trespassing, breaking and entering.
Famously, one town did, in fact, prosecute, a bear, right? I don't have the book in front of me now. It's at home, damn it.
But yeah, historically, there were animals were taken to court. They had legal representation. Insects, too. I detail this case of a bunch of caterpillars that were told to appear in court. This is the 1500s, mind you. Told that they should appear in court on a certain date, at which point they'd be assigned legal representation. Obviously, they didn't show up. But anyway, the legal system was a technique that used to be used. Obviously, we don't do that anymore.
And I suppose when the towns were doing that, or the prosecutors were doing that, or the courts were handling that, it wasn't because the bear or the insect was going to abide by the law, but rather a way of making a statement?
Yeah, and a way of saying, look how important we are, the people who are the arbiters of the law. We control even nature. Even nature will respond to our wishes. And it was a way of showing also, you know, in the case of the caterpillars, they decided, well, even though they haven't showed up in court today, we will assign some land for them so it is fair and the people will have their land and the caterpillars can eat the plants over here. So they, you know, appeared to be wise and thoughtful and careful and all-knowing. So it was kind of a good publicity stunt, I think.
You write about bears and leopards and rats and killer trees. What are one of your favorite anecdotes when we talk about this? What's the story you like to tell?
Oh, oh, there's so many. I did enjoy my time in Aspen, where there's a lot of issues with breaking and entering, shall we say, bears. That bears are particularly good at getting into homes in Aspen. The building code actually forbids French door handles, because they call them bear handles, because it's so easy. You just push down. You don't really need fingers. Just push down and then lean in, and then you're in. So you're not supposed to use those. Even hollow doorknobs, you're not supposed to, because the bears can sink their teeth in and then turn the knob and get in. So they're very good at just walking into homes. Sometimes when people are eating a meal, grabbing something off the table. Any place that has, you know, an automatic doors that open, like a ski resort or a hotel, those will open for a bear, you know, with the electric eye. So the bears just wander into the lobby. It's kind of amazing. I was there only 2 days, and I thought, now, what are the odds that I'm going to actually see a bear doing its thing? And the researcher and I got up 3:30 in the morning, went into one of the alleys behind where the restaurants are in downtown Aspen. Within 3 minutes, came upon a big plastic bag of food scraps from a fancy restaurant that was ripped open, and it appeared to be the scene of the crime. And I thought, damn, we missed it. And the researcher said, let's just hang out for a few minutes. And the bear, two bears, lumbering down the alley, came right back and got to work on the leftovers. And of course, that's a thrill for me. I don't see bears very often. They were like 10 feet away. So that, you know, just and the trials and tribulations of that city in trying to keep these food scraps away from bears, to stop attracting them downtown. You'd think it would be easy, but it's not. There are laws, but then you need somebody to enforce the laws. And you
are
need
bears smart?
I think bears are very smart.
Or clever. I mean, they're witty.
I rode around with someone from Colorado Parks and Wildlife who gets the calls when there's a break-in. And I said, tell me some bear stories. And I expected, you know, mayhem and violence and, you know, things like that. And he said, it's amazing. They get into a kitchen and they'll open the refrigerator and take out a carton of eggs and set it aside. He said there was one case where the bear unwrapped a Hershey's Kiss, which is hard to imagine, but very endearing. And they're also, you know, he said they'll break in. Yeah, they'll go to a deck, and they'll see that there's a door here, and you kind of imagine them sort of with brute force smashing it, but they'll kind of like lift it out of the frame and just carefully set it aside, lean it against the house. Like they're very, they're kind of, it's hard to be mad at them. Is the sense I got?
Well,
from
but
people.
That and so you know the subtitle as you mentioned is When Nature Breaks the Law. And I wonder what the message is of your book. And I think I know. And it is, let's not be mad at these animals. Animals do what animals do. And maybe we ought to find a better way to coexist with them.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, animals follow their instincts. I say When Nature Breaks the Law, it's just kind of a fun subtitle. They don't actually, no one expects them to follow our laws. They're following their instincts. And it's, you know, in most cases, we're providing them with something that they want. We've kind of set up this either a restaurant or a place to stay, and it's like they sort of see no reason not to take advantage of it. So it's up to us to not do that and secure food scraps and all of that.
I caught a mouse in a mouse trap the other day, and then the next morning when I went down, the mouse had not completely expired, and I felt so bad for the mouse, and I thought, but this is my house, and I can't have you running around in my house, so I have to try and eliminate you and kill some of you, and I felt terrible about that.
You didn't use a glue trap, did
I did
you?
Not.
Oh, good, that's good, because there's a big difference.
That matters to people, which we kill mice?
Sure, there's ways to do it that are more humane. A snap trap is, if it hits in the right place, is a very quick way to go. But the best thing is try to figure out how are they getting in. Some buildings are old and it's hard to keep them out. But, you know, you can sometimes figure out. They can get in, though, the size of their head, they can get through a hole. There was a study where they actually documented this. They put something really appealing, food. I think it was... I can't remember what the food, so it was some sort of hot dog concoction. Anyway, hot dog, peanut butter, whatever it was on the other side of a small hole, the actual width of the mouse's head, and they were able to get through. It's kind of an amazing thing. It's like me fitting through my own mailbox.
Well, you're a thin person.
Tried.
Maybe you could, if anybody could pull it off here, I would say it's Mary Roach. Bats are able to penetrate very small spaces too, I understand. And we had another encounter with nature. I, the other day, walked out of the bedroom, and actually Brenda walked out of the bedroom. She came back in and goes, we have a bat. And so then I had to go through that routine, which I'm sure you've run into or documented how people deal with bats before.
No, bats didn't make the cut.
No,
they didn't make the cut.
Not in this book.
What did you do?
We
have to talk about
that. I got a shoebox, and I went in and shushed him into the shoebox, and then he started flipping around, and I went out and released him in the yard. And a lot of people admonished me for that because I did not get a rabies shot afterwards and was told that when a bat wakes up in your room, or if you wake up with a bat in your room, they may have alighted on you or penetrated your skin in some way, and rabies is fatal.
Ah, wow. Yeah, I got a rabies shot before I went to India for the monkey story. As it turns out, monkeys are not an effective transmitter of rabies over there, so I didn't need to go. It's a very expensive vaccine.
Yes,
but I got
it is.
Yeah.
But you also had an interaction with the macaw. Was that what I'm thinking of?
Macaque.
Macaque.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a story you can tell us?
Yeah, I was mugged by a macaque.
Okay, wait. Hold on. Elif says pause. It's 11:27. Do you have a few minutes? Can you visit with us after the news?
I can stay here all day, John.
No, you can't. Mary Roach is here, though. And you can get her book. It's called Fuzz. And the subtitle sort of explains what it's about, When Nature Breaks the Law. New York Times, LA Times bestseller. Oprah's magazine, O Magazine, said, "You are our most consistently entertaining science journalist." Who would argue with that? It's 11:28, and this is WGN. Wanted to finish our conversation with the very patient, Mary Roach, whose latest book, Fuzz, is subtitled When Nature Breaks the Law, New York and LA Times bestseller. If you're into science writing or just curious, fun, sometimes funny writing, you should read her books. They include Bonk, Packing for Mars, Stiff, Gulp, Grunt, Spook. Spook was about the afterlife. And now Fuzz, about interactions between human beings and nature. Which has been your bestseller? Which is the one that people packed the most interest for?
Stiff. Stiff has been the bestseller. Stiff. I think
The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers.
Yeah, you know, kind of got on some high school reading lists, and those tend to keep that people, once they're on the, those lists, they don't get updated that much, so people keep buying. It's great. So Stiff, yeah, I'm always competing with myself. Every subsequent book I do, I'm competing with Stiff.
So you hope that Fuzz can overtake. Stiff was about human cadavers. What was the takeaway from Stiff? What did we learn?
Well, Stiff was just a book about all these various sort of post-mortem careers, interesting things, noble and valuable and sometimes strange things that you can do once you're dead. Cadaver research, basically.
So yeah. I could donate my body to science and be a cadaver. I could donate my organs. What else? What are my other options?
Well, some of the research, the early automotive testing when they
crash. You could have been a crash test dummy.
You could have helped calibrate the early crash test dummies. You wouldn't be the crash test dummy, but you'd, you know, anyway, a lot of that stuff was done in the 60s, but then they do, you know, they'll do a new dummy, like a side impact dummy, and they'll have to hire the cadavers again, bring in those lovely people who don't feel pain.
What did you conclude from Spook about the afterlife?
Well, Spook was a book about, I just loved this notion that people have tried to use science and scientific method to prove or disprove that there's an afterlife or a spirit, that you persist. And so it's a look at some of the, you know, spiritualism, the early days of ectoplasm. I didn't answer the question definitively. Is there life? I'm so sorry. We still don't know.
But you laugh as though that's an odd way to pursue it. Why wouldn't you apply the scientific method to the afterlife?
Yeah, well, I think it's a terrific method, and there's a stigma attached to it. There are two universities here in the U.S., University of Virginia and University of Arizona, at the time I wrote the book, that were doing research, that these were, you know, PhD-holding researchers who were looking into it. At University of Virginia, they did work on near-death experience and cases of alleged reincarnation. And I thought that was great that they were doing it. But at one point, the University of Virginia, the people in the parapsychology department were quietly requested not to talk of their work. They have there's a big endowment there from Chester Carlson, the inventor of the Xerox machine, that's to be used only for research into the persistence of personality after life. So they want to keep, you know, using that money.
Walt Disney's head is currently stored?
I don't think so.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, yeah. Walt Disney's head. There's a lot of heads floating around.
True.
There are heads in the cryogenics, is that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't visit any heads. I kind of regret that. That would have been interesting, but...
Well, you're not done. I mean, so what's the next angle on nature that you want to pursue?
On nature?
Well, or science,
Writing, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm open to suggestions.
Yeah, well, I don't have any for you. I thought that Bonk would have been your best seller.
I thought so, too. Bringing the study of sexual physiology into a laboratory setting was such a tremendously awkward thing to do. It was a wonderfully interesting field to dive into. You know, Kinsey and Masters and Johnson, the biggest names, obviously, and they were really the first to get up the guts to do it. And they got a tremendous amount of angry pushback from people who didn't feel that it was appropriate. And so the book looks at them before them, and then more contemporary work. And I would have thought so too. I don't know. I don't know if people just felt funny walking around with a book about sex research. I'm not sure.
There have been books that I've taken onto airplanes, and I take the cover off so people won't know the book I'm reading. If it's a book about Donald Trump, for instance, they might infer that I'm pro or anti-Trump, and they don't know, and I right. don't want them to judge. So I have been reading a lot of books about the previous president, and whenever I'm in a public place, I don't share the cover of that for that reason.
Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law removes the covers of Stiff. She did. And then I laughed at her. She said, no, it's just to protect. I just don't want to damage it, Mary.
It's such a lovely book. It's not that I'm upset that my daughter wrote a book about coupling. Although you gave a very funny TED Talk when you were talking about, it was a TED Talk,
was it? Yeah, it was
not?
A TED Talk, yeah.
About orgasms and how one woman who would orgasm whenever she brushed her teeth. And so the researchers went into great detail to discover how that happened. I'm telling your story now, but the funniest line was, you'd think she would have great oral hygiene as a result of this, but this woman did not.
Yeah, it was something I imagine perhaps early on it was delightful, but then she kind of, sometimes you just want to brush your teeth, John.
I don't have time for this. I just want to go to bed.
I
and
used
brush
to
my
get
teeth.
The weirdest mail from people after that TED Talk aired. I got a note from a man. He said he was in Greece, and he said, I have an orgasm when I ride a bicycle, and I ride a bicycle to get around. And so when I'm trying to reach a destination and I know it's going to happen, I'll ride in circles to let it happen, and I'm frequently late for my appointment. I wasn't sure what he was asking me or just...
I just wanted you to know.
Just sharing.
Her latest book is called Fuzz, When Nature Breaks the Law, and it's about killer trees and bears and leopards and rats and all sorts of amazing anecdotes, but then always a deeper purpose to it. And I think one of the lines from you is, perhaps the model should be shoplifting. Supermarkets and chain stores don't poison shoplifters. They come up with better ways to outsmart them. It's about how we can all share this planet, even as some members break the law. All right, Mary, I'm out of time. It's nice to meet you in person. We've spoken many times on the phone. Thanks for doing what you do.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me in.
And if I come up with another science-based topic for you,
lay it on me, baby.